comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful planet we call Earth. Thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things, but you chose to be here, and I'm delighted you did, and I appreciate it. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. There has been a significant earthquake today in Mexico. First reported as a 7.9, and it has been revised downward to 7.4. The epicenter was near, and I'm not sure I will say this correctly, but I think it's pronounced Oaxaca, which is southeast of Mexico City. The epicenter was not in Oaxaca, but near. The president's daughter, Malia Obama, was staying there with a dozen other American students on a school trip, and there's no word whether she's been evacuated, but the White House has said that she's fine and was never in any danger. This earthquake was felt in Acapulco and in Mexico City. The last report that I read said that there had been some 800 homes damaged and there were injuries. But as of showtime, I have not seen any reported deaths as a result of this. Certainly, our thoughts and prayers are with the people there as they work through and deal with this catastrophe, this latest catastrophe. It certainly is not the first and won't be the last that Mexico has had to deal with or that other people around the world have had to deal with. And, you know, it's if we ever get to the point where we're numb to this, we really at that point need counseling, I think. You know, it is happening more frequently as time goes on, but we should never, ever be numb to the very real human suffering that takes place when these things happen. Let me remind you that we have a conference coming up. Alternative Universe Eye Conference is coming up on April the 21st, and you want to be there. There are great presentations by great presenters, and question and answer period after each presentation. It's a live conference. But it's unlike other conferences. It's not just another conference somewhere that you get to watch. This conference is directed to you. And you're not just on the sidelines watching. This conference is directed to you. And you don't have to get on an airplane, buy an airplane ticket, and go to the conference and get a hotel and pay for meals and all that. None of that. It's coming to you. And it only costs $10. So get over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and click that giant link in the middle of the page that says Alternative Universe Eye Conference, and get your ticket. I mean, you're going to be kicking yourself forever if you miss this. Also, don't forget, we have a seminar coming up in our members community. It's coming up this month, and you can be sure you're there. Just join. Become a member. All right, we're going to step away for break, and we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, your host, and we've got, I think, a fantastic show lined up for you this evening. You know I am a fan of Nikola Tesla. If you've been listening to this show for any length of time, you know that I am a fan of Nikola Tesla. And I'm a fan of his because he was not only a genius, probably the preeminent genius, I would say, of, you know, the 19th, the 20th, and it's carrying over into the 21st century. I don't see anybody that's passed him. But not only because of that, but he was a man of principle, great principle. And was like all of us, he was concerned only to have enough money where he could continue his work and, you know, just live. At one time a millionaire, but died in poverty, and has been dissed by the academics here in the United States and in some European countries. Dissed and ignored, and yet they can't even do the experiments in their labs without Nikola Tesla's technology. If you use anything that is run on alternating current electricity, which is the world is running on alternating current electricity, then you're using Nikola Tesla's technology, and that's not even the tip of the iceberg. My guest this evening is J.W. McGinnis, and J.W. McGinnis took the International Tesla Society from a membership of 67 to over 15,000, including many scientific professionals. He's dedicated a very large part of his life to promoting alternative energy, and he's been at the forefront of keeping new alternative energy developments in the public consciousness. And it's my pleasure to say, J.W. McGinnis, welcome to the Kevin Smith Show.
Well, Kevin, thank you for having me. I've been looking forward to this experience tonight. I know your audience is going to be right up our alley. Nikola Tesla, I can't say more about him, but I would like to say one thing before I get started.
Mm-hmm.
One of our founders of the International Tesla Society, he passed away last Saturday. It came kind of suddenly, cancer of the throat. And you know how despicable that disease is. But at any rate, he passed. He's survived by his wife, Dorothy. Tom Wright is his name, and Tom had introduced me to Tesla and really caught me afire. I had, unfortunately, I had just lost my daughter in a car accident, and I'm driving down this avenue, and I'm seeing these gigantic sparks flying in the air. And I didn't know what it was, but I went over to where it was at, and I ran into a whole crowd of Tesla people. They were having a big conference. So I saw this huge coil that Bill Weishaupt had brought. And if you're familiar with Bill Weishaupt, he makes the best. And from that point on, I just dedicated myself to the principles of the man, what he's accomplished. I also have taken a long time to write a book. I've been working on it for about 20 years. And the book is The Truth About Tesla. And many people have written about him, but they haven't gotten into the personal side of the man. And there were things about him that really show character. His attachment to other great inventors that people are not even aware of. And so tonight when I talk about this, I look forward to some. Maybe I'm going to contradict what can be reasonably believed, because so many people say things, but when you research them, and you got to go deep, Kevin, you got to go deep, but I have. Mm-hmm. And as you said, he died in poverty, but that wasn't quite so. He was actually on a retainer from the Westinghouse Corporation. He had another one that was coming from the Yugoslavian government. And all told, it was around $1,100 a month. And at that time, that ain't too bad.
Well, now, yeah, but compared to when he had $1 million, it's still pretty far. Yeah. Precipitous fall. Well, let me ask you about the International Tesla Society itself. What is it? What is it all about?
Okay, well, we're a collection of people, and Kevin, I try to figure out percentages, but there can't be more than maybe 2 or 3% of the people that are out there that are totally disgusted with what has been put on our plate in the area of technology. Mm-hmm. Instead of slaving away for the man over gasoline, over every convenience that we have today, they've put a price tag on it. They have neglected, at the same time, these people that have become parasites of technology. The inventors are maybe the last to get paid, and Tesla was that way, but they depleted his fortune by constantly challenging his patents and inventions. And there was a cabal between J.P. Morgan, Thomas Edison, and Marconi to keep him in the courthouse. That kept him from competing in a lot of areas. He was too busy defending himself. And he was in court 132 times, and he prevailed on every one of them. But I see now that in... let's say Monday morning quarterbacking, the way they came out winners, because they tied up his time. And time is something we can't replace. But by taking him away from the time he could have continued and expanded on what he was doing, that's almost criminal.
Thomas Edison in this country, I remember when I was a kid how we were taught in grade school what a great genius he was and how he invented electric light bulbs and all of this stuff. But Thomas Edison, first of all, he was a mean-spirited little man, mm-hmm. and he was a second-rate inventor. He really was not first order. He was a second-rate inventor. But he was friends with some guys who had big pockets. And, and I'm glad you brought that up about this cabal, because he was a mean-spirited thief.
Oh, he certainly was.
He was, in my opinion, he was a thief.
Yep, he surely was. And I've looked at this time and again. And, at first glance, by Tesla's victory in the courtroom, and then you calculate all the time they've held him away from, like I said, expanding. These people are pretty crafty, and mm-hmm. they get this stuff all figured out. And the Tesla Society is composed of people that are kind of mavericks. Mavericks in the way that they view life. They're not satisfied that the man is going to give them this latest convenience. We're in a death grip now with the oil companies. There isn't much help for us. And so the value of these people, I don't care if they're down the street in a garage, some of the most ingenious things that have ever been created have come from areas and people that had no business creating it. There's another thing that you probably are aware, that Tesla said he never discovered anything. He said, he didn't invent anything. He said, everything has already been discovered. He was only revealing what already exists. And I'm not a religious man at all, but I was just listening to the radio last night, and a guy gets on the radio in a kind of a little short sermon at the end of the broadcasting day. But he talked about in Ecclesiastes, and don't ask me verses and all that other stuff. Mm-hmm. But in there it says, the Lord saith, there is nothing new under the sun. All that has been created is there. It's just up to us to basically find it. So Tesla was always humble in the way he proceeded. He, you know, like some people, the word Eureka, coming from the Middle Age, when a fella discovers something and goes running into town, Eureka. And, well, they named a vacuum after it. But Tesla, though, he was very mild-mannered in the way he made his presentations. And he was American, and this is what has to be pointed out. He was as American as you can be. Every one of his patents, from the time he comes to America and he submits them to our U.S. Patent Office, starts out with, I, Nikola Tesla, an American citizen, declare. And that is how proud he was of his citizenship. He was a genius. He spoke about 7 different languages. He had people coming to him from all over the world, and he was a worldwide traveler. He met scores of inventors. One fellow, and I'm doing research on it now, and it will be in the book, but we are going to recreate the Tesla watch. The guy who originally did it, and I've seen Tesla watches out there, but they're not Tesla watches, Kevin. They don't even come close. But this guy comes from Switzerland to New York City to see Nikola Tesla, and he has this watch, and he knows that every Thursday meeting or Thursday evening, Tesla goes to a meeting amongst engineers, and this guy had a wrinkle to his watch that he couldn't explain, and apparently the tension on the spring of the watch was giving off a sort of frequency. He didn't know what it was, but he wanted Tesla to look at it. And that's basically what the synopsis was. It was the first time that somebody had reached, and you know the precision that goes into watchmaking, and Switzerland on top of it all, but this guy tweaked a spring of some sort, and it put a pressure and a low grade hum. At my age, I couldn't hear it if you know you turned it up about 30 decibels, but nonetheless, Tesla heard it, and this was beginning the watch that Tesla had made for him by this watchmaker. And we're going to recreate it. We're going to make about, I'm going back to this Swiss company that is the forefather of the company that invented this watch.
So what's the significance of this hum?
Okay, well, the hum seems to have reached a harmonic that gives well-being and drives off ill frequencies that can develop when you're exposed to, let's say, electronic equipment, generators and things like that. It somehow it drains that emission that is out there in the ether, And it is claimed that if you're exposed to this, and I don't even think it's claimed anymore, I think it's pretty well documented, that if you're exposed to some of these alternating magnetic waves, they can induce a cancerous reaction.
Well, I'll tell you something else about it. Nikola Tesla's alternating current was not at 60 cycles, because he discovered that 60 cycles was mind-altering. All of our alternating current today is at 60 cycles, and it is a mind-altering frequency.
Well, that's 60 cycles, and then in Japan it's 70 cycles. Mm-hmm. But the opposite is getting direct current. And it would be impossible, of course, to do what you can with alternating current. And it reminds me of a little story, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. But Tesla and Edison were in this war of the volts, they called it. There was Tesla with alternating current, and there was Edison who had direct current. Now, each of these gentlemen had advocates. Mark Twain was an advocate of Tesla, Samuel Clemens, and a fellow that was an advocate for Edison was a guy by the name of Eli Whitney. He's the guy who invented the cotton gin.
Yeah.
So there's this big fair, and they're doing these comparisons between alternating current and direct current, and the people from Tesla's side of the coin are saying, well, you know, you can't really move it that far. You got to get a transformer in between to continue a link, and you can service maybe 1,000 feet if you're good. Well, Edison was determined to prove it wrong, so the distance of this midway at this fair was about a half mile. And so in the middle of the fairground,
I hate to do it, but we have a break that's going to take over. So we're going to start right in the middle of the fairground when we come back from this break. Ladies and gentlemen, we're talking with J.W. McGinnis. He is the head of the International Tesla Society, and we're going to be hearing some fantastic stuff from him this evening. We'll be back right after this.
Listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
You are indeed listening to The Kevin Smith Show, wherever you happen to be all around this world, and I am delighted you're here. We're talking with J.W. McGinnis. He is the president of the International Tesla Society. And J.W., when we went away for break, we were in the middle of the fairground in that story. Are you with us, J.W.? Well, I don't know what has happened to our guest. But anyway, perhaps he shall return in a moment. Maybe he had to go get a drink of water or something. Nikola Tesla is responsible for all of the gadgetry that you enjoy. Now, that doesn't mean he invented, for instance, the remote for your television, but he did invent wireless remote. Somebody else may have invented the one that you're using, but it was Tesla who invented wireless remote. Somebody else invented the radar gun that the cop uses to catch you speeding, but it was Tesla that invented the principle upon which radar is based.
So he invented the principles upon which MRI is based. You go to the hospital and they do an MRI. Well, you are the beneficiary of Tesla technology. And as I said, all, absolutely all, of the electricity that's being used in cities around the world and out through the countrysides, well, that was invented by Nikola Tesla. And yet, we don't hear, at least in the United States, we don't hear about Nikola Tesla when we're kids growing up. No, no, no. We hear about Thomas Edison. And the more you know about Thomas Edison, the less there is to like. He did invent some cool stuff, but compared to Tesla, he was second rate. Well, let's see if our guest is back with us. JW, are you with us? Well, I guess not. Perhaps, JW, you are there, but perhaps you have muted your microphone. We'll try again in just a moment, and we'll see if we can get him back with us. What do you know about Nikola Tesla? You know, Nikola Tesla was born in an area that today we call Croatia, Hrvatska. That's how they say it, Hrvatska. And his father was an Orthodox priest. In the Orthodox Church, priests can marry, and they do. And his father was an Orthodox priest. And back in those days, in the 1800s, I believe he was born in 1856. Back in those days, there wasn't a lot of occupational choices for young men growing up. They could go into the army, or they could go into the ministry of the church. That's if they didn't want to be, you know, common laborers. And so his father really wanted him. Tesla didn't want to go into the military, and his father really wanted him to go into the church and become an Orthodox priest like himself. And Nikola Tesla, was just not interested in that either. But it's an interesting thing. His father, when according to Tesla's own writings, when he was growing up, his father used to do this exercise with him. Perhaps it was kind of like a game where they would sit silently and try to guess the other's thoughts. So a little exercise there, perhaps, in mental telepathy. And as our guest told us, Tesla spoke about six or seven languages. So a very brilliant man. We'll give it a try again, see if our guest is back with us. Are you with us, JW?
Gee, I just...
Well, you just cut off your mic again. So I don't know. I have no idea.
Nick, am I...
You're on now.
Okay, I... Here, hold on. I've got a tech helping me.
Okay, we'll be back with you in a moment. Nikola Tesla immigrated to the United States of America. Now, even though he is from an area that today we call Croatia, ethnically, we are told he is Serbian. There was a point in World War I where the exiled king of Serbia, King Alexander II, came to New York City and met with Tesla. And there are pictures of that meeting. Of course, by this time, Tesla is an American citizen. And as our guest has told us, he's proudly an American citizen. But he did meet with King Alexander II. And it's interesting that shortly after that, the tides of fortune turned in what came to be known as Yugoslavia. Yugoslavia was made up of six republics after World War One, and I'm sorry, World War Two. I told you World War One. It was World War Two. It was made up of six republics, and one of those republics, of course, is Croatia, his homeland. So I have speculated that perhaps whenever King Alexander II came to visit him in their private conversations, he perhaps asked Tesla for some help and perhaps received some technological help from Tesla. I don't know that, and I don't know that it could be proven, but the tide did turn, and of course we know how it turned out, in that the Nazis were expelled from Yugoslavia. It was a long, hard ordeal, but they were expelled from Yugoslavia. And the nation, which had been, of course, the Kingdom of Serbia, now became Yugoslavia and included six republics and two autonomous areas, Vojvodina being one of them. And so we will try at this point to pick up our guest again. And JW, are you with us?
I believe I am. Can you hear me?
We can hear you fine. All right, when we went away for break, you were telling us this story about Tesla and Edison sort of having this contest and the something about the fairground.
Yeah, there was a big criticism of Edison and his DC system in that you couldn't move it very far without an intermediate transformer. And the average measurement was maybe a little over 1,000 feet, and Edison's people wanted to prove it to be twice that far. So at this county fair, there was a field where they have all the carnival rides and the little stands that go up and down. In the middle of this fairway, they called it, was where Eli Whitney was, and he was going to introduce to everybody the cotton gin. And during his presentation, he had this curtain around his big tent and platform, and some dogs were playing, and a dog got a hold of the skirting and pulled it off of Whitney's platform, and right there before everybody was a huge transformer that the Edison people had put in there to carry the current the rest of the way to the end of the fairway, where AC had no problem at all. So that was a slap at Edison, but I'll tell you what really caused the biggest stir was when Edison electrocuted a bullet, or electrocuted an elephant in Madison Square Garden right in front of everybody. He put that elephant, he had a pail of water for each foot. Can you imagine the cruelty? Would anybody get away with that today?
And he should not have gotten away with it then.
No, but they wanted to prove just how deadly AC power was. But Tesla would always say, well, you know, if you're an idiot, it could be dangerous, but it is the form of electricity that transcends distance, and he never had that with DC. So that was one of the stories, but I know you want to talk about energy tonight, and I do too, but well, I'd like to...
But I want to talk some more about Tesla before we get to that.
Oh, okay. Great. Okay. I love to talk about him. In writing this book, which I will submit to the publisher this fall, but there were some things about Tesla that are just unbelievable. One of them was he was transfixed with other people that were doing magnificent things. And right there at around the turn of the century, there were a whole lot of these Indian mystics that would come to this country. And they would do the Indian rope trick, and almost invariably they would be debunked. And then, I believe it was right around about 1908. You'll have to buy the book now. But at any rate, this Indian mystic came to America, and his name was Vivekananda. And Vivekananda was known for the Indian rope trick and for his wisdom. Well, what is now Pasadena Stadium, the Rose Bowl, he appeared there. And he walked out in the middle of this crowd. There were 100,000 people there plus. He walks out carrying this huge basket, and he sits down in the middle of the 50-yard line. It wasn't lined out for football, but I mean right in the middle of the stadium. And once he positions his basket, he gets out his flute. He assumes the lotus position and starts to play, and this heavy rope goes skyward. It went up about 30 feet. Now the whole world is looking at him. No one else, no other Indian mystic before him, ever got into a position where people could see in front of him, behind him, and sideways and everything. This was total exposure. And this rope rose right up to a point where it was perpendicular. He puts down his flute, and he climbs the rope slowly all the way to the top and disappears. The rope collapses and goes right down into the basket.
All right, we have to step away for break, and hopefully we will not lose our guest during this break. And we'll hear the rest of that story when we come back. All right, don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest, J.W. McGinnis. J.W., are you still with us?
Well, I sure hope so. Am I?
Okay. So we have this Indian mystic, and he's out in the middle of what is now the Rose Bowl.
Right.
And there's 100,000 people watching him, surrounding him. He plays his flute, and the rope climbs out of the basket and goes 30 feet up in the air. He climbs the rope and disappears at the top.
Right.
And then the rope falls back in the basket.
The rope collapses and coils right up in this basket. It's a huge woven basket. And so I was really impressed. So this is what happens. He's also known. The L.A. Times had never seen anybody do it where it could not possibly be debunked. And he had reporters there, and I mean, he really electrified everybody. But he also was known as a healer, and he actually healed people. And, everybody wanted to get near him, and at that time, I want to tell you about Sarah Bernhardt. Sarah was one of America's sweethearts. Actually, there's been 138 of them. She's one of them. Mary Pickford was another one. Anyway, there's always been this scuttlebutt about Tesla, you know, is he gay or something, you know? And it wouldn't matter to me if he was, but he wasn't. He was a man that was dedicated to science. But here's what happened. Sarah Bernhardt goes to Vivekananda. And she was a very successful star. She made a hell of a lot of money. Well, her husband became her manager, and he abused her and kept all the money, and he was hopeless drunk. But she would show up on the set sometimes with black eyes. She'd have to go home. And as popular as she was, Vivekananda became a fan of Tesla, reading about him. He saw no gig about him. He figured, gee whiz, this is the kind of guy Sarah Bernhardt ought to know. And on top of it, Tesla is one of the handsomest men in town, period. Well, Vivekananda had gone around the nation to show his skill. And Tesla had run over to Chicago to see one of his performances. And, of course, told him about New York and Madison Square Garden, where Tesla, on a regular basis, about every 6 weeks, would put on a big show right in Madison Square Garden. And I'll tell you about those another time. But nonetheless, Vivekananda really liked Tesla and had wired Sarah and said, Sarah, meet me in New York. I want you to meet Nikola Tesla. So she arrives in New York, and she is a real disciple of this Vivekananda. And Vivekananda put on a show at a stadium, and I'm not sure which field it was, but it was one of the major ones there in the New York City area. But he also visited Tesla in Madison Square Garden. And he just saw Tesla. Now we're talking about remote wireless control. Tesla had a demonstration of his remote submarine in this body of water that they put up in Madison Square Garden. It was about 5 feet deep. The audience was peering down on it, but Tesla was a man of the people, and I'll tell you, he, you know, just very generously would hold out the control thing and give it to the audience, and I mean, they just roared about it. And Mark Twain was always there, because Mark Twain would always do these experiments. And here's Tesla has this suit of fire where they turn out all the lights, and he's on an isolated coil and lights up like a Christmas tree. I mean, he was an entertainer as well, and a lot of people don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
But I want them to know that. So I've been on this campaign for a long time because, you know, you got to document, hey, we got a woman involved here. Is it true? Well, anyways, Vivekananda wanted to be a matchmaker. And he liked Tesla. Tesla liked him. And he's told Tesla, he said, listen, I know this woman, and she is America's sweetheart, and I think you ought to know her. And Tesla, he was a shy type of guy, believe me. And some of these rumors were not false, and I'll get into those too. But at any rate, Vivekananda arranged a weekend at the Mayflower Hotel where him, Tesla, and Sarah Bernhardt all signed in for the weekend. And they did not come out over 3 days and finally came out. And Sarah Bernhardt gave Tesla a kiss on the cheek, and she took off with Vivekananda, and Tesla returned to the hotel he was staying at, and at that time it was still the Waldorf Astoria, although he moved over to the New Yorker. Well, I think what Vivekananda tried to do was to be a matchmaker, but you know, Tesla was so involved with his work and so involved with, he wanted to take the millstone of labor off our backs. And everything these days, they want to charge you for it. It, you know, you get a glass of water now, they want 50 cents. I mean, I get, you know, here in Colorado Springs, we have Fort Carson. And a lot of these troopers are coming up from the Fort Carson, and there's a McDonald's there. And they're charging them, I think it's 70 or 80 cents for a glass of water. And these guys were ducking bullets just a month before, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just aggravates me.
But, it's despicable, that really is.
Yeah, it is. But, You know, we have these, and this is the problem with science in general. We have too many of these bean counters. There's nothing wrong with bean counters, but they've left the bean counters take control. And so they're not looking at benefit. They're looking at bottom line profits. And because of that, we'll take a look at cancer. What do you see year in and year out? They've got a new machine, but they don't have the cure yet. They have spent trillions. And I'll tell you, I'm fed up with it. I often speak at public forums, Kevin, and one of them is the Kiwanis Club, and I just pointed it out. And, you know, everybody agreed with me. You know, all you're seeing, and now they've got a another implement on. They call it a knife. I don't want to bum wrap it. If it is effective, I'm all for it. You know that. But, you know, I am running out of patience. I'm 72 years old. I've been in this game for 40 years. And I'm getting tired of being disappointed. And I've seen guys, well, like I mentioned in our off-air conversation about that grinder, you cannot find that guy. Well, I can find him, but nobody else can find him. And because we are a collection of these rare individuals that are mavericks, and I'm a maverick myself, where we don't want you on the field unless you can perform. I'm not going to look at your GED or PhD or anything else with three letters. I want to know, does this man know how to fly the plane? If he does, get this other guy out of there and put him in there. If the guy can't perform, well, then there's a couple of things that happen, Kevin, and it breaks my heart. There's many times I run across these inventors, and they're self-deluded. They actually believe that they have what they really don't have. And there's quite a few of them out there. But I love every one of them, believe me. And I kind of have a reputation for a wet blanket. But, Kevin, I want to see something happen. I don't want to die knowing that we are a wasteful society, that we are a society that is living off of the very riches of our planet, and I'm talking about oil and coal and so forth, but we are a society that has a more sophisticated way of gathering energy and dispensing it, and it should be no fee or you know, low fee. Like I was talking about these satellites, these phone companies, what they're charging. They forget who put that satellite up there, who built that satellite. All they're doing is they got the bucks, they order a satellite, but it's an enormous amount of work by the technicians and sophisticated engineers that can put a satellite together.
All right, we have to step away for break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about some new energy, alternative energy, and perhaps how to take this millstone of labor off of our backs. Don't go away. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest this evening, J.W. McGinnis. Those of you who are joining us just now in this second hour, welcome aboard. We're glad you're here. My sincere sympathy to you for whatever it is that kept you away from the first hour. J.W. McGinnis is the president of the International Tesla Society, and he took it from a membership of 67 to over 15,000. And it includes in its members physicists, doctors, scientists of every stripe, and folks just like you and me who are interested in
new energy, alternative energy, and many, many inventors and inventors of breakthrough technologies. He's talking with us this evening about Nikola Tesla, and now we're going to move into talking about some of this new technology and some of the breakthroughs. Before we do that, though, I would just like to urge the audience to think about this. Now, if we transferred, like, overnight to free energy, there would be economic collapse, but that's happening anyway, so there's nothing to worry about. But there would be economic collapse because of all the multi-trillions of dollars that are invested around the world in oil, gas, and coal. And, I mean, there's pension plans invested in that stuff, too. Major businesses hold major chunks of stock in energy. And so it could cause economic collapse if it happened overnight. However, if it phased in and you phase one in and phase the other out, imagine, ladies and gentlemen, imagine what energy would be turned loose in the economy when all of those dollars are not going toward petroleum and coal and gas. Imagine all of those dollars and euros and hryvnias and rubles and everything else. Imagine all of that being turned loose to go into further development and expansion of businesses, and people could actually afford their homes and a meal. It's getting to that point where there are people, you know, that have to make a choice between do we pay for the house or do we eat today? And it finally gets to a point where you have to eat and the house has to go, and that's happening. That is happening right here in the USSA. And it's happening all around the globe. Imagine what tremendous economic energy could be turned loose if we turned loose of oil, gas, and coal. All right, J.W., let's talk about that. Like you said, you're getting tired of this. I think a lot of people are saying, look, we've heard about these great breakthroughs before and nothing ever comes of it. So where are we?
Well, first off, what I'd like to explain to people is life is a big game. So we got all of the players on the field, but the players that are on the field, they all have these matching costumes and so forth, something like a football team. But out in the stands are a whole lot of burly-eyed guys that would be loved to be playing, but they're not allowed on the field because they don't have the matching outfit. Mm-hmm. Well, with Tesla, we don't care. If you got something, let me know about it. I'll check it out. I'll tell you if it works. If it doesn't work, I'll support you. If it does, I'll help you understand what's going on. If you don't fully understand, I had a fella in Canada that had a little generator, and you know, it just didn't make sense to me. And I called in another fella that he's a grad from Drexel, but he's a Tesla guy. But Drexel, that's where we get our mathematicians, if you don't know. But he went through the whole thing, and he found that it's probably one of the most efficient generators he's run across, but it was not something that was what we call over unity, or producing right. more than it consumes. But it was a big trial and error with him, and I put him in contact with another guy up there in Canada, and they've come out with a little generator based on his technology. But to say that you have something that is over unity, you are saying a mouthful. Mm-hmm. And there's not many people that when I get done visiting with them or talking to them that will still convince themselves they're doing something unless they really are. So
okay, so let me ask you this. What's your background?
Well, I'm a broadcast engineer. I'm pretty much self-taught, though. I had a very rambunctious time in the educational system, and it wasn't until I got out of the Army where I really woke up and went back to school and tried to clean up a lot of the skullduggery that I caused when I was first fooling around. But I started to take life serious. And I was never content with, no matter what a professor would say, I would challenge it. I wanted to know, hey, maybe it isn't. You know, you're not going to slip that by me. So I've been a little on the challenging side all my life. But I've also taken a lot of knots on my head from people that have tried to say, well, you got to do it this way. Well, Tesla people don't do it that way. Tesla people innovate themselves, and they go out and they just do it.
There's well, let me tell you something that I think you might agree with.
Yeah.
You probably have heard of Dr. Michio Kaku, and he's quite famous, of course, for quantum theory and string theory and so forth. And we see him on TV all the time. He was a guest on my show, and a very gracious man and a great guest. But in the course of that show, he had mentioned several times the laws of physics. And I said, well, Dr. Kaku, isn't it true that there really are no laws of physics? Those are just descriptions of our current understanding. And it's based on observation, which guarantees it's flawed.
Yep.
And I said, in sometime, somebody's going to come along, some smart person's going to come along and step right over one of those laws, just like Einstein stepped over Newton's. And there was a slight pause, and then he said, absolutely, that's absolutely true.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when I hear that, well, that won't work because that would violate this law of physics. You know something? The universe violates laws of physics regularly.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're not actually laws of physics. They are very flawed descriptions of our current understanding.
No matter what you can imagine, if you reach out into the universe, you could be anywhere, you will find whatever you imagine. Now, they go that a star cannot exist without a magnetic field. Well, by gosh, they found this huge white star, and it has no magnetic field. There's not a lot of them, but they're out there. So it shows that even though everybody's got it cinched up, that there is nothing that doesn't have a magnetic field, there is something that doesn't have a magnetic field. So challenges go on all the time, and I'm glad you talked about Newton and Einstein. Because before Newton, Newton was made the king's physicist. A lot of people don't know that he killed about 12 of his competitors. The king was trying to pick the brightest guy in all of this. And once he appointed Newton as the crown's physicist, he went out and took out his competitors and got into a very rigid system of these laws of thermodynamics, so on and so forth. But that was another guy that, you know, a different time. We can't judge him. It was a different time in a different place. You know, they always want to judge, well, the Romans were killing. Well, what do we know? We weren't there. We can't really... different times call for different things, but in our day and age, it should be one of giving, because there's no reason for somebody to sit back there. Now, like 1% owns about 80% of the country, but that 1% can sit there, and all that money is rotting away in the bank, and every night you look on the TV, you'll find people that are starving and so forth. And there's a big gap with people that become reliant on government programs. We've got to start with the educational side of things and start to point them at bountiful types of of careers, like, you know, being a good mechanic, as opposed to being somebody that wants to be a, now, don't get mad, but let's say a social worker. Well, how many of them are out there? Well, far more than what they'll ever need. But there is no commanding quality about them. But when you have someone that has the will of himself, he's got a good pair of hands, or her, I don't want to rule out the women either, but they step out and they take it upon themselves to take command of their life. And there's one fella that I know that came up with a way of saving 50% on your electricity. Well, you'll find out how to do that if you, you know, become a member of the society. Another fella that we're going to have at our conference, we're helping him develop a kit system. But he's collecting solar energy in a totally new, novel way. It's not using those photovoltaics, but he's using evacuated tubes within evacuated tubes. The outer tubes are cool. The inner tubes are, well, way beyond red hot. And these, of course, will heat your home. I mean, at 3 o'clock in the morning, he's still can't shut it off. But this did not come from a man that went through a university. This came from a guy that worked on the line that was looking at what was going on and saying, you know, I bet I can do as good as that. And he did. There are some other fellows that I know that are very sophisticated, and they bring out their stuff, electrolyzers and so forth. I do a lot of work with hydrogen. But all in all, there hasn't been a big change in the past 300-400 years.
Well, now, this invention that you're talking about, collecting solar energy in a completely different way, of course, it's collecting it as basically as heat.
Yeah.
And heat can be converted into electricity.
Oh, very easily. This is another thing that we're working on. And I'll tell you another one that is, you can take natural gas and you can run it through a membrane and it'll come out all electricity. And they've done that up in New York State. There was an abundance of natural gas, and they're wondering, well, you know, the electricity is higher in heck, and what can we do about it? Well, they, one of those green organizations, I don't know which one, but they came up with an idea. Why don't we get a grant and see if we can't find a way that we can capture that gas? There's an abundance of it. But we don't want to burn it. We want to turn it into electricity, and they've been successful at it. So I always kind of like to hear about that because it's thinking as well as anything else. You can't only be an inventor; you've got to be a good thinker. Mm-hmm. You got to think about things, and that's the beginning of it all. But the key thing in invention is number one is get started, and rule number two. Finish. Those are the two cardinal rules of invention. But getting started is what we try to encourage people to do. We are on a quest to get a new museum. But in the museum, we want a work area where there might be some machinist down in Arkansas who maybe needs to work with a guy up in Idaho. We'll invite them both down and we'll put modern equipment out there, some Burlington Millers and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. But give them a time certain that they come in, complete their project, whatever it is. We'll stand behind them. But, of course, you know, we got to look at it first. We've got to find out if it's really has the promise that the inventor feels it has. And we don't discriminate. I mean, I'll look and somebody, you know, I have found things one time down in a guy's basement. But it is nonetheless, the guy had a little clean room. And it was down in his basement, but he got this idea. He went back to the Egyptians. He wanted to know how these dyes lasted all these thousands of years, and they're still brilliant. And he researched for quite a while, and he finally got a recipe that he feels duplicates what they're doing. what does he do but he comes out with a pair of glasses. And these glasses are used by pilots. Many of the pilots that are big commercial flyers and that, they have a vision problem. After so much exposure to those high altitude rays and so forth, their eyes will start to lose their ability to select colors. And with these glasses, they're restored to normal. But
wow.
You know, yeah, they put on these glasses and it restores their color vision back to normal again.
But and this guy invented this in his basement.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, he took a lot of years, but he started out as a stockbroker. Then he didn't like that, and then he became a real estate guy, and then he he was semi-successful in real estate, and he got a little money. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so he decided to do what he wanted to do, and so he started to research it. And he's got quite a garden of different types of rocks. It's crazy, but I go to these places. I don't, you know, eliminate anybody, but I put those glasses on, and, you know, I'm a legally blind person, but I put them on, and he showed me a pillow. And the colors and everything just really bounced out. Now, if I have something real close, I can identify it, but it's got to be within about 6 inches, but I could see these colors, and they were so bright and stand out on their own. You know, that green is not going to take any crap from that red one, you know, right next to it. But it's an amazing thing. So he's got a sight, and he's one of our Tesla people. He's just doing something different. But when these pilots have got to take that test, well, that's the guy they want to go to, is Gary Mueller. He'll fix them up. And it's they're pretty affordable. I don't know about you, but I gave up a long time ago on buying expensive sunglasses, because no matter where I am at, I'll lose them.
Oh, yeah. I'll lose them or I'll break them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That happens all the time. But his glasses, of course, are something, if you pay a couple hundred bucks, well, I think you'll probably hold on to them pretty good. But
that is fascinating, absolutely fascinating. But what do we have in the energy department that is breakthrough?
Okay, well, there's one fella, I haven't gone up and seen him yet, but he's up in the Seattle area. And he's what's known as a double tank circuit. He's running a generator, but he is clipping the flow of electricity. So one goes into one capacitive bank, and one goes into the other capacitive bank. And as one is discharging, the other one is charging the original one, and it supposedly will give you free electricity. Well, I'll be writing about that on our webpage. I'm going to go up and see him. We're planning a big conference in September, but before I really announce anything, I want to go out there and see if there's any raw stuff that ought to be in there regardless. And from what this guy has told me, I think he's got something. But, you know, until you're there and you got your own meter out, you know, you're taking somebody else's word. Not that people are dishonest, but, you know, an invention is like fashioning your own child. You don't want anybody coming around and maybe making that curl go the other way. You want it going that way that you originally started with.
Mm-hmm.
But a good inventor needs a good critic, and that's what I do. I try to criticize, but help. And if I can't help them, we usually have a whole cadre of retired guys like me that have a lot of whiskers in the field of electronics and electricity and chemistry and health, for that matter. But transportation is another big one. They've got you just have to take my word for it, but this Chevrolet Bolt, it's got about a 40-mile range. Will you tell me if that's suitable for you? It isn't for me. But then you take a look at that Tesla car, and it's got a 300-mile range. And they say it can probably go a little further than that. But there is nobody that has a car that goes beyond 300. It's like they have equivocated that you're going to have an electric car, it will not go or exceed 300 miles. And I think that is kind of some inside engineering where they want to hold back on these people that have these electric vehicles and can maybe push the envelope and keep on going. But they do it in such a way that it's not perceivable. But I see it. But I've got a pretty keen eye in those areas. But at any rate, I went to the Phoenix Nationals. I think that was a couple weeks ago. And we had one gentleman that I met. He has the world's number one electric truck, and he's got the number one electric motorcycle. And, I mean, those things, they go as fast as anything that's powered by an engine. And it's all battery. And I looked at this one, and, I mean, he's really getting one heck of a performance out of this pickup truck. But he's using discarded electrical equipment. He's picking it up, and he's making world records.
Don't you love it?
I love about those guys.
Yeah, you got to love that. We got about a minute till break here. All right, so this guy's out in Phoenix, you say?
The one with the electric truck and the electric motorcycle, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He's out in Phoenix. The other guy I was talking about, the glasses, that's Gary Mueller. He's here in Colorado Springs. Then another fella out there in Seattle, and I don't want to say anything until after I
talk to
him. But I have about six or seven guys who I think are really exciting. But a Tesla conference is unlike any other conference you'll go to. Not only will you get all of that energy stuff and maybe the transportation stuff and the health stuff, but there's fun stuff that goes on as well.
All right, we have to step away for break. And we'll hear about the fun stuff when we come back. I also want to talk about free energy. Tesla apparently knew how to do it. We'll be back right after this.
Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith, and my guest this evening is J.W. McGinnis, and he is the president of the International Tesla Society, and we were talking about this upcoming conference in September, and you said there's some fun stuff, too, that will take place. What kind of fun stuff are we talking about?
Well, I'll tell you what, Kevin. I have been in the Rocky Mountains most of my life, and not far from Colorado Springs, about 45, 50 miles, there's a mountain, and it's called Crystal Mountain. And it's part of this large forest area. And some years back, I had gone there. And to make a long story short, I saw extraterrestrial vehicles. And we call them UFOs, but I am sure they're extraterrestrial. I'm just positive of it. Anyway, I have talked with our friend Jerry Wills. And I invited Jerry to head up a committee where we would do maybe two or three UFO hunts during the week of the conference. Naturally, we can't. I wouldn't do it on the days that we are, you know, doing other things with the conference. But prior to the conference, we are going to select about. I'd say about 10 people, and we're going to take them to this area that I was at, and I have quite a story. It would take all night to tell you about it, but It is really the convincing element that I needed, because I've always wondered. You see it in a paper and you go, oh, gee whiz, another one of those UFO guys and that. Where you turn that that disking into, you know, some real fact. You know, the difference, Kevin, between phenomena and fact is when phenomena occurs twice, it's no longer a phenomena, it's fact.
Mm-hmm.
And I have been there more than once, myself and several other people here. But we've kind of kept it to ourselves. But I'm kind of a small-time celebrity in this community. So, it's hard to say, hey, I was out last night. Yeah, I saw Andy the alien. You know, they'd kill me. But let me
tell you, I'm absolutely merciless on the mindless mushrooms that are the majority of this planet.
Yeah, yep.
And the stupidest question anybody can ever ask me is, do you believe in UFOs? What is there to believe? I don't believe in doorknobs. You know, I don't believe in this computer. It's sitting right here. I'm using it.
Right.
I don't have to. There's nothing to believe. They either exist or they don't. And these mindless mushrooms and the mud sucking media,
yeah.
I am merciless on them. I intend to scorch as many mushrooms in my life as I can, and they're either going to stop being mushrooms or they're going to get scorched.
Well, you know, I was at the University of Nevada, and we were. Just talking about this new device we have. It's called a HiPod, and it's a device that produces hydrogen, which acts as a fuel booster for your automobile. You put it on, you get better mileage, but more importantly, it has eliminated all of the toxins from the exhaust. And we had a group of about eight PhDs that came up from South America. These different companies were represented, and they are very, very concerned about Bogota. Bogota, when I went down there, you choke on the water, you gag on the air. I mean, it is really bad, and you see these buses, you know, belching out all this. Oh, I mean, it's like Denver was back in 1958 or something. It was really bad. But, what's happened is these fumes and everything, they roll down off of the Andes. Bogota sets pretty high. But you go out into the Andes and you can just see miles and miles of black jungle. It's all the trees and everything, they're all black. And it's all from this pollution. And these people that go, you know, well, a little bit won't hurt. Yes, a little bit will hurt. And you got to wake up. You can't continue to do this. So this is one of the places in the world where we are currently negotiating, and another one is in Poland. But how that comes out has nothing to do with the society. It's just another invention that I saw and have done everything I can to highlight it and talk about it, and hopefully it'll become a companion with everybody's car. I've seen another invention that I think is just you cannot imagine this, but there's a guy that has a technology, and it's all his own. It's an old one, but it's a technology of springs. Can you imagine winding up a spring and jumping in your little car and going somewhere?
How far can you go?
Well, it's got a range of about 20 miles, and it's nothing more than a quick change of an old spring to a new spring, and you just keep on going. But it's an old technology. I'm anxious to see it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm fortunate enough that people still email me, and I always email everybody back. But the real interesting ones, why, you know, I bring it to a meeting with everybody else and discuss it. And everybody in our organization, they're all helpers. We want you to succeed. And it doesn't matter. You can have a chair at the university. If there's something we can do, we'll do it. You need a good machinist? We got them. Mm-hmm. We have the crafts. Put it that way.
All right, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about people at the university that may need some assistance. First of all, I am not anti-education. I have an excellent education myself.
Yeah.
I am anti-ego that goes with education. Just because somebody has a PhD, in my estimation, is not a credential. Unless, you know, you're selling PhDs.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a credential, and I'm with you. The credential is what can you do? All right, so let's talk about free energy. Tesla apparently figured out how to collect energy, basically, and this may not be the right term, but
well,
it's what I know, out of the air, because he used it to power an automobile.
Well, I've got a lot to say about that, but I want to tell you, at one of our conferences, we had one of our experimenters. His name is Jerry LeBin. He's over there in Palm Desert, California. But he came with a Tesla antenna, and a small scale. The antenna was up maybe 15 feet. But we had it metered, and it produced power the whole conference. And although the power wasn't a lot, it gave a physical appearance to the children that came and the inventors that came. And Jerry's thing is, there is power here. Well, he has a few other Tesla devices connected to the antenna, but he can harvest that power. It isn't enough to really manifest anything great just yet. But I can tell you that NASA had experimented, and you might remember when they had the space shuttle, and they let out that, they wanted to let out 300 feet of this antenna as the shuttle is orbiting.
And, yeah, they call it the tether experiment.
Yeah, and it got to 70 feet and busted. There is so much power up there, and people don't even realize it. But the thing that really held it was, here we have a powered antenna. It's not just it has a capacitive sink to it, but here it is moving through space at a region where we are just inundated with magnetic fields, and it just couldn't handle it. But
you could see it from Earth after it broke.
Yeah.
I stood outside and watched it. And you know, it was just a kind of a glowing haze in a straight line. But you could see it from Earth.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have something similar to that. But it's self-standing, and it is a... you can call it a gamma collector. It doesn't rely on the solar. You know, what a lot of people don't know is that we get hit by these rays 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
And the strength, it isn't really strong, but we're being hit by it 24 hours a day. So we have been struggling for years to find an antenna for it. And there have been men that have built the antennas, but what happens is, if they're good, they collect just too much. They just blast themselves apart. Well, I knew a fella, he was out of the Canyon City area here in Colorado, and he invited me to his house. His whole house was powered by this device, and it does not look like an antenna. And I said, it doesn't look like an antenna. He said, really bright. He said, that's why they've never worked, is everybody's trying to copy what we know about radio waves, but they don't know about these gamma rays. And so he has a net. And as an example, he takes a battery and dead shorts it. And you see there's just nothing left of that battery. We go in, we have a cup of coffee, he puts a couple clips on it, and we come back and that battery is revived. Another fella up in Idaho, this guy has got it with batteries. He has a thing that charges his batteries faster than he can run them out, and he's driving around in a golf cart. I've got to see, but if there's anybody that wants to be part of our organization, just email me at teslapro@hotmail.com, and I'll get back to you, I guarantee.
But, well, it seems to me with these Tesla antennas, whatever configuration they are, that you could install some sort of regulator on them to keep them from blowing apart.
Well, you would think an experimenter that showed that that isn't possible when you're dealing with natural forces. You cannot harness it. John Searle will be the first to tell you.
Yeah, he's been on this show.
Yeah, it just breaks away. You can't. It's kind of like holding back the Niagara. I mean, you just can't imagine how much power you get. Here's an example. This guy up in Michigan. He shows me this cascading magnetic device. Not very big, about the size of, a 3-pound coffee jar.
Okay.
But he's got it with all of these stems and stuff. It's really complicated. And he said, well, I discovered this here, and once it starts, you can't stop it.
All right, we have to stop for just a moment. But we'll come back to the 3-pound coffee jar right after this. Don't go away. Back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach, and we're talking with J.W. McGinnis. We only have a few minutes left here in tonight's show. And J.W., let me ask you to just pick up where you left off there.
Okay. This is, like I say, about the size of a 3-pound coffee can. With all of these magnets interspersed and so forth, it looked like a Rube Goldberg deal, but he keeps on triggering it and keeps on. He has a little winder, you know, that he keeps on trying to start it. And I'm almost giving up on this guy. I was with him all day and half the night, and I'm getting ready to leave the next day and give one more try. So again, down in the basement, and this thing is latched to a workbench. And I'm telling you, the top work area had to be like 1 inch wood at a minimum. It was an older type of thing, but anyways, this is bolted in place. By gosh, the thing started, and I'll tell you what, Kevin, it kept going faster and faster. And I am not kidding you, it was almost like a blue emanation starts. I could not believe what I'm seeing, and then it just flew apart and ripped right on out of the table. I was glad I didn't get killed. But he's working on it again, and he teamed up with a fella, and unfortunately the guy he teamed up with owns a machine shop, and he wants to do everything his way.
Well, what's the purpose of this device? What does it do?
With a constant spinning, and if you can control it, you've got yourself a generator, a fuel-less generator, a magnetic generator. And this thing, it's light enough, you can take it anywhere you want, but just figuring the torque it would take to blow it off the table, I had figured that thing had to be worth about well over 100 horsepower. And this thing was the
size. And it had no power source.
None. None other than the magnets themselves. And by the way, I gave them a whole box of brand new magnets. I want them to do it again. But unfortunately, teamed up with this guy with this machine shop, so he calls me and says, JW, every time I try to do something, I leave it. I come back and it's all changed according to this guy's specifications. I said, get your stuff out of there. You need somebody that listens to you and doesn't try to teach to you when you're the innovator. So that is a little far off yet, but there's a lot of stuff that's in the pipeline, and I'm interested in everything. That's how I make my my life. I'm really not you know, money driven or anything like that. I have a fair retirement and so forth, but I want to help people and I want to see it happen. Myself, my colleague Skip Juhas and Jesse Gutierrez, Dave Hansen, I can go on with names forever. But we're all tired of it and we want it dealt with. And you only see these big studies going to the big manufacturers who have no skin in the game. They're making money with this fuel crisis and energy crisis. They're making money. They don't want to see it change. We want to, you know, put something that can operate and give you the power you need independently of everybody else. And speaking of that, there's one fellow I can't afford not to mention, and he has super steam technology. His name is Leonard Dorsett. He's out of Dallas, Texas. And he has got the most powerful thing I have ever seen. We developed so much steam, we stopped that I-40 freeway there in Dallas, Texas, down there by the TC complex there, Texas Instruments. And we had the fire department coming to us saying, whoa, please stop. It was just something else. We really got it going. But this thing, when we measured it, it was over unity. It was providing more power coming out of it, driving a turbine, than the power it used to get it started. So, and it's all computer controlled. He's in the middle of a new design, but this is what happened to him. And I warn everybody, be careful. Don't put something in storage that you don't have control of. Because it turned out that he had a group of individuals that stole it from him. And it's something that I know breaks his heart. But he had all of his controls on the external part of the device. Well, now he's got a better reason than ever to put everything internally controlled. And this guy was once president of the mechanical engineers in Texas. So he is not a PhD or anything else like that, but he's worked with his hands from the beginning of his career, and he wants to get this thing out. So there's guys everywhere, and I love meeting them, and I want them to meet me.
Tell us again how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, the best way is to email me at TeslaPro, TeslaPro, at hotmail.com.
Okay, now, how difficult is it to join your organization?
Well, we'll have information on that on our site by Friday. We're just launching it this week. And we had the death of one of our founders kind of caught us unexpected, but we are, you know, going as fast as we can, but we should have our site fully loaded by Friday, and that site is internationaltesla society.com. and we'll have information in there about membership, and we are also looking for people that would like to help us get this museum bought and built. We have found a couple of sites. We have people that are dickering with us, but, you know, I'm almost at a point where we probably have 100 or 200 members here in the Springs area, and getting these guys to find some land to put it on. But I am so encouraged by the people in Manitou Springs, a suburb of Colorado Springs, that I can't, you know, I can't see going anywhere else but there. The city likes us. The Chamber of Commerce likes us. Everybody loves us. And all we need is a suitable facility where we can have the museum, have the work area, and a social area. And that's what we want. So that's what the membership goes for. It helps build the kitty. Nobody's making any money here on this side. So it goes in and it's held in trust, and we use it for the rent and other things as we go along. But now we're just getting the organization up again. We're a 501c3 nonprofit recognized by the IRS. We're a corporation in good standing in the state that we do business in, Colorado. But we do have members that have their own Tesla things out in San Francisco, St. Louis, and there's about three other towns.
Okay, JW, we're out of time. I want to thank you for being with us. If you will, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a landing. There you go, folks. J.W. McGinnis. It is called the International Tesla Society. You can get in touch with him at teslapro@hotmail.com. So if you have an interest in being affiliated with something like that, and I think it's a great thing, get in touch with him. Don't forget the Alternative Universe Eye Conference coming up, and don't forget to make sure you're a member here so that you can get in on our free seminar coming up very, very soon. My friends, call me CLI, my enemies do too. And you can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.